Welcome to the Nerd Party.
Hello, I'm Matt Hansen.
And I'm Tristan Riddell.
And you're listening to the Nerd Party.
Talk nerdy to me.
Welcome to Nerd Party.
This is episode 41. Thank you so much for downloading, subscribing, and liking. Please go to thenerdparty.com for all your Nerd Party needs. From there, you can find all of our episodes and where you can listen to us, which is virtually everywhere. And make sure to go to our Facebook page at facebook.com/thenerdparty. So, Matt, last week we did a little something different where we brought on a special guest and you were absent. You were busy, you had things to do.
I had things to do, and plus I'm not as up on the X-Files as you and the special guest was, that of course being Mrs. Riddell, your wife, who you know, I have to say, you had told me that she had never done any sort of podcasting before. Obviously she's probably heard you while you're talking in the house, but she's never actually sat in front of a microphone before. And I gotta say, I really enjoyed her debut. I thought she did a fantastic job. And, you know, you two had great chemistry, which you hope you would, having been married. But she really kind of loosened up and sounded like she was having fun. So I would really like to have her back and maybe even have her on one of the shows where I actually am here.
Yeah, it's. I appreciate you saying that, and I'm sure she does too, because we got a lot of positive feedback with her. Like, a lot of people were very nice and very supportive, and that's one thing that I really like about the nerd community and the nerd party community specifically.
I'm sure a lot of people would also rather she start being the permanent co-host, but
I don't know if people would want to go that far, but. It was nice. It was a lot of fun, and she was dreading it all week. But then, right after she was done, she's like, "Wow, that was fun!" So, and again, all the positive reinforcement has been really great. I can't remember who it was. I think it was Lee at Lee Nostromo. I think he said something to the effect of, "He can't wait to see my wife and you on the same podcast, so you can have a Marvel cage match."
You know, I don't think that's going to happen, only because. No, I'm serious. My first meeting, because I've never actually spoken to your wife before.
No, not yet.
We've been friends for almost 4 years now, but I haven't actually ever spoken to your wife. I would like our first encounter to not be so adversarial.
You know what? I think that's a smart idea. I think so. And like we always say, we try to keep it positive on the Nerd Party. And speaking of keeping it positive, well, actually, I don't know if this is positive or negative, but you saw a movie last night. And I'd love to know what you thought of it.
I did. So I'm catching up, as I did last year and as I try to do most years, on the Oscar Best Picture nominees before the ceremony happens at the end of February. And so last night I finally saw The Big Short, which is the new comedy drama about the housing crisis, the American housing crisis back in 2008 with Christian Bale and Ryan Gosling and Steve Carell and a whole ensemble of people that I've seen for sure. You know, it's filled with those character actors that you've seen, but you don't know their names. And Brad Pitt's in it, but his company's produced it. And he actually doesn't have as big a part as you would think that Brad Pitt would take up. It's kind of like his role in, if you ever saw 12 Years a Slave, I mean, he was in that and he produced that, but he was not the star. It did not have a substantial role. But I will say that I very much enjoyed the movie. And it's a movie that actually makes you feel kind of funny, because a lot of it is filled with it's definitely a dramedy. It's filled with a lot of scathing humor that really had me laughing, especially from Steve Carell, who is not playing a clown. I mean, I just want to like emphasize that he's playing this real serious role, but he's playing this he works for, I believe, a hedge fund who's a real cynic about how Wall Street and banks conduct their business. So every time he has some sort of snarky remark and is not afraid to tell people what he actually thinks of them to their face. So it's a movie that makes you laugh, but at the same time, it's really horrifying considering how corrupt because if you take this movie at its word, which is always questionable, but if you take the movie at its word, then, you know, it's shockingly horrifying how corrupt the banks and the housing market was leading up to the big crash in 2008. And this movie basically takes you through the 3 years leading up to the 2008 crash as these different groups of people catch on to the fact that the housing market is you know, essentially built on sand that's going to collapse. And in a way, they're trying to expose it, but they're also not great guys themselves, because what they find is that they make this discovery and they start betting against it, so that when the market does collapse, they're going to profit off of it because they bet against the housing market. And so it's a movie that leaves you conflicted and still makes you laugh. And I got to say, as someone who is not versed on, you know, marketing terms or Wall Street economics, the movie handles this very cleverly. They make you understand everything through a series of cameos, might I add, which adds to this evening's discussion. But they have like these cutaway scenes when they're talking about you know, complicated terminology, and they'll have like some random guest star come in and kind of explain it to what they're actually saying in layman terms. And it's actually very entertaining and not distracting and not condescending either, which I thought was, you know, that's a line that's really hard to straddle. And so it was funny. It really was funny and horrifying. And I really enjoyed the movie. I really liked it a lot.
Well, that's really cool. Like I'm trying to do the same thing as you, where I want to see as many Best Picture noms as I can, but I never, ever, in the history of me, I've never been able to make it. But it's, yeah, I'm glad you like this one, because this is one that I've definitely been looking forward to. And like you said, speaking of cameos, today's discussion, we haven't even introduced today's discussion. It is our top five favorite movie cameos of all time. This is not, again, this is standard Nerd Party procedure. This is not what we think are the best cameos of all time. These are our top five favorite, and I have so many. I have more honorable mentions than favorites, so this is going to be really tough for me.
See, and it was tough for me too, but not quite in the same way, because, you know, I love movies, as listeners of the Nerd Party know, but when I watch these movies, I don't think about the people that were in them for 2 seconds, so it really, like, I had to think a little bit about who to put on this list, because, you know, cameos are just something that are entertaining, but they blend into the background, I think, of a movie. So it was hard for me to come up with the list, but I did manage to come up with five and at least three honorable mentions, four if we count the fact that I have two for one actor. So,
well, let's just go down the list, and I think my list is going to change as I'm giving it to you guys. So let's start with number five. Matt, who's number five on your list?
And actually, thinking about it, I probably could have added something from last night's movie onto this list, because the cameos I thought were that fun. But number five on the list, it comes from a movie that listeners of the Nerd Party will know that I actually don't care for all that much. it's a movie that kind of makes me sad to watch, but I think that this cameo actually worked incredibly well, and that would be and I consider this a cameo because he's not very in it that much, is Lance Henriksen in Alien 3.
That was a great cameo. I'm so glad that you brought that up.
And I'm more specifically talking about not him at the end, which I don't care for as much. I'm talking about when he came back to at least provide the voiceover for the wrecked Bishop android. And it's a very heart-wrenching scene to watch, because of course we grew to like his character in the previous film. And when we get to see him in this film, he's torn up, shredded. He's gotten even worse since the crash of the escape pod, and is basically asking, you know, Ripley to euthanize him after he helps her. So it's really painful to watch. It adds to the fact that I don't like Alien 3 that much, but it's acted very well, and it's done very well. So for that alone, I'll give it a pass and say that it's a very good cameo. So it makes number five on my list.
As you talked about, you know, like, we have very differing opinions on this movie, but it's mainly it. Sometimes it feels like it's the world against my opinion, but I like this movie, and I think that was a great, great cameo. But I think the reason why I don't love it as much as you do, well, actually, you know, maybe not, but it reminds me of what could have been. That's what pisses me off.
It does remind me of what could have been. And like I said, it makes me not like the movie overall, but the acting and the dialogue, I think, are well done. So that's what gets it on here.
Absolutely. All right. Well, my my number five is a much lighter than the one that you just. It does not involve euthanasia whatsoever. It's Matt Damon in Eurotrip.
I have never seen Eurotrip. Is he in that?
Yeah, he has a small cameo, but an important one. Where it's Eurotrip is, I don't like dumb, gross comedies, but this one is a highly underrated film.
Doesn't seem up your alley.
It's not. There's a few things in my collection where it would kind of surprise you. I have a few Eurotrips in my collection, but not many. And this is a really, really funny movie. It's stupid. And it's over the top, but it's filled with tons of little moments that just kind of stick with you. And one of them is that, like, at the beginning of the movie, the lead character gets dumped by his girlfriend. And her name is Sophia, and the lead character's name is Scotty. And, you know, like, he thinks that, you know, like, it's right on graduation from high school. And he thinks that she's been cheating on him this whole time, but he's never had any confirmation. All of a sudden, they're both at the same post-graduation party. Everybody's there. And then Matt Damon comes out with a shaved head and a dog collar on. And he's this punk rocker. And he just says, he's like he opens the scene. He says, I want to dedicate this song to the freakiest sex kitten I know. And that's Sophia. And then she just comes up to the front of the stage. And he starts singing a song. And it's called Scotty Doesn't Know. And it's all about how he's sleeping with Sophia. Behind Scotty's back. And just talking about it, just making me laugh. Like, everyone who hasn't seen the movie, go see the movie. But if you don't want to see the movie, at least Google that scene. Go to YouTube and find that scene, because it is hysterical. It's obviously not Matt Damon singing, but it's really, really funny.
Right. That surprises me, because, like I said, I've not seen that movie before, and it doesn't seem like it's in your normal sophisticated wheelhouse that you like to brag about. So,
well, I like to slum it every now and again. You know, I just had Taco Bell today. You know, we can't all have steak all the time.
No, of course not. So, are we moving on to number four then?
Number four.
Okay, number four was one that took everybody by surprise. It's kind of a cameo slash small role, but the reason it makes it, I think it's list worthy, is because when this movie came out, almost, I would say about half of the audience had no idea that this person was in the movie. And that would be Tom Cruise's role in Tropic Thunder. You've seen it, right?
Yeah, see, I was wondering... Oh, yeah, absolutely. I was wondering how that was going to be classified. Like, is it a cameo? Is it not? Because he kind of plays an important role, but he has a couple of different scenes, but he makes such an impact. It has to be a...
But he's there mainly for gags, and he's not in he's not in that many scenes compared to, like, Ben Stiller and Robert Downey Jr. But the reason I put him on here is, not only is he funny, but he's playing so against type and is playing... Just even in looks, because, like, someone had to point that out, that was Tom Cruise. I couldn't recognize the voice. I couldn't recognize even the face.
And a lot of people didn't realize it right away.
Because I don't think he was credited. I don't think he was in any of the promo material. I think it was just like, it was one of those great surprises. And the character is so against type that you think that someone who acts very, very, you know, is well-spoken and sophisticated and not usually liking to be the butt of somebody's joke. I mean, I never associated him with comedy, per se. The fact that he was so willing to go there, I thought was impressive. So he makes my list at number four. I think it was a great wave, because that was 2008, so it's only like 2 or 3 years after the whole... jumping on Oprah's couch and the whole Scientology thing. It's a great way to say that he can take a joke and he actually does have a sense of humor.
Yeah, it was very much a redemption move that I think pulled off. And I remember during that time, that was the same time that Valkyrie came out. And Tom Cruise was super pissed because he got a Golden Globe nomination for Tropic Thunder and got completely snubbed for Valkyrie. And he was just so angry that he vocalized it. He was just so angry that this happened. And I just couldn't help but laugh, because Tropic Thunder was a good movie and he had a good cameo. Valkyrie was not a good movie.
No, it was not.
But good choice.
But oh well, he actually did manage to redeem himself. And, you know, made two more missions and did Edge of Tomorrow, which is really underrated. And I think he's finally reestablished himself. It only took him about 10 years, but.
I think Edge of Tomorrow surprised me in a very good way, because everyone was downplaying it. Everyone thought it was going to be horrible, and it's a really solid movie. It didn't surprise me as much as Dawn of the Planet of the Apes or Rise of the Planet of the Apes. But it was kind of along those same lines.
No, but it was super solid and entertaining, and actually,
we're
getting off on a tangent, but it's a movie that actually sold me on Emily Blunt as an action star, which I never thought of before, but she was great.
Oh yeah,
in that film.
Yeah. All right. Well, my number four is this is another movie where it's just a dumb comedy, but I love it to death. Like, I've probably seen this movie as many times as I've seen Star Wars, and I have a buddy that I used to watch it with, and whenever he comes over to visit, we watch this movie, and it has some of the two best cameos of all time. So I'm going to combine them into one. But like, you can consider one as my honorable mention, but I'm just going to talk about both of them now. And that's Billy Zane and David Bowie in Zoolander.
Yes. Sequel coming out next month.
Sequel coming out next month. And like, Billy Zane made such an impression in this movie that he is now a part of the ad campaigns for the second one. And I don't even know, I'm sure he's going to be in it, but we haven't seen any footage of him, I don't think. But like, he's doing the voiceover for the commercials and for the spoofs and the fake ads and everything like that. Like, they did a fake perfume ad where it's called Zoolander Number 2. And it's Billy Zane is narrating it, and he calls it the scent of Number 2. And like, everybody's just like, what? And it's just, I love this because he just kind of comes out of nowhere, and he's just a friend of Derek's. And he's like, no, man, you don't want to mess with Hans. You know, he's limber. I've heard crazy things about him. And then he's like, put a cork in it, Zane. And then he just runs off. And then they're about to get into a brawl. Like, Billy just like stands behind him and like puffs up his chest, like trying to like show that he's like, yeah, this is Derek, my boy. You know, it's just, oh, it was so great. And David Bowie, you know, it was such an important thing to have David Bowie in this movie that when he came on the screen, like they did a freeze frame, the music hit, and they put his name up on the screen. It's like you wouldn't know that was David Bowie. They're just like, hey, just so you know, this is an important cameo. We got David Bowie.
And he
was great. He was and is an important fashion icon. And so it was very appropriate for him to be in that movie.
I know. And your mention is unfortunately very timely.
Yeah, unfortunately. But like, these kind of moments, like the great performances that he had in the past and these great cameo types, we're all going to remember him even more because of it.
Oh, sure. I'll be interested to see if they have any. I'm sure they will. I'm sure they'll have tons of cameos in the second one. Whether or not they're just entertaining remains to be seen. But good choice, because
we'll find out.
When I think of Billy Zane, I think of the jerk from Titanic. But you're right. He's done other things that have been actually that was probably better than his role in Titanic.
I actually, when I think Billy Zane, I think The Phantom.
Oh, you
did
would.
You ever see that? I was raised on that movie. It's such a bad, cheesy movie, and it's so great because of it.
That explains so much about your taste in superheroes.
It's so great. Oh, yeah, because Batman's such an underrated superhero.
You would like to.
Anyway,
think so.
What's your number three?
My number three is something that we've covered on this show before, so therefore it's kind of cheating, but it can't be understated how much I thought this cameo worked, and that was, of course, Drew Barrymore in the first Scream. That's technically a cameo. She's not in it for that much, and she's a big name. So I think, you know, if you want to go back and listen to my full thoughts on it on our Scream retrospective that we did, you can go back and listen to that. But I'll just say that she was very effective in selling this movie in the sense that she was a name and you think that she's going to be the star, and they were able to pull the old psycho Janet Leigh routine and kill her off quite quickly and quite effectively. And she helped sell the movie, I think, for the rest of the, you know, 80 or so odd minutes that are left of the film. She really got us hooked, and so I think that's enough to get her to number three for me.
Very nice. Yeah, that I you know, that part, that role is so iconic to me that I don't even think of it as a cameo, but it is. And
I think she's definitely on screen for less than 10 minutes.
Oh yeah, absolutely. And it's you know, the whole story, like we talked about, is because of the ad campaigns and the posters and the push and everything like that. It was trying to build it up as it wasn't a cameo, but it ended up being one. So yeah, I think that's a great choice. Okay, well, my number three is this one. It's it's one scene and it's one speech. It's like a monologue, and it's could be one of the greatest monologues in the history of the world. I mean, it's right up there with Shakespeare and his soliloquies, and that would have to be Christopher Walken in Pulp Fiction.
Oh, the watch up the ass routine. I loved it.
The watch up the ass. He's like,
I debated putting that on my list, actually.
This is so amazing. Like, this is okay, there's a thing called Shawshanked. Like, whenever Shawshank is up on the screen, like on TV, no matter what part it is, you have to watch it. Mm-hmm. And Pulp Fiction is kind of that way with me. But if it's this scene, if I catch this scene on TV, boom, I'm watching it. And I don't care what I'm doing. If I'm doing laundry or something important, I'm watching the scene and probably the rest of the movie. And Christopher Walken is very much Christopher Walken. Like, this was right before the time where he was just hired to be Christopher Walken. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Like, now he's just he's himself. Like, when people say they want Christopher Walken in their movie, they mean just that. This was kind of before that trend. You know, he plays a, I don't know if he's a general or I can't remember what he is. So, like, Christopher Walken served with Bruce Willis's dad, and Bruce Willis's dad died. He was killed in action. But before he was killed, he gave Christopher Walken his watch, which was his father's watch. So it was Bruce Willis's grandfather's watch, and that's how Christopher Walken knew the story, is because he was told the story. And so he told Bruce Willis's as a child about his grandfather's watch, and it sounds simple, but that, like, he just gives the history of his family, the history of the watch. He's very, very calm, hushed tones, close on his face,
and it's
then out of nowhere it cuts to a wide, and he's like, so we hit it up his ass, and you're just like, wait, what? And the whole story just takes a complete turn, because that's how he was trying to hide it as a POW,
right? And it's like, I just love how it starts off as like this very heartfelt speech for between Walken and, you know, the very young kid Bruce Willis, you think it's going to be this sort of emotional speech, and then, of course, you know, it's Tarantino, so
right.
It takes that left turn. I thought that was hysterical, and you know, I'll just put it out there. I had not seen Pulp Fiction until this year, when I was watching all of Tarantino and leading up to The Hateful Eight. It was one of those ones that I always meant to get around to most of his films, but just never did. So now I had an excuse to. And I just thought it was so. I'm glad I saw it now, because now I can appreciate not only the influences that he was doing, but all the, you know. It's a little bit more sophisticated kind of humor, so I'm glad I saw it more as an adult than I did when I was younger.
Yeah, I personally think that's one of the greatest movies of all time. I freaking love that film. All right, so we're moving on to number two.
Number two is also kind of a cheat, because it straddles just the line between, I think, cameo and supporting role, but it can't be understated how much it, like, tugged at the heartstrings and really, really made me, you know, fall in love with the film even more than I thought I was at that point. And I'm talking about specifically Leonard Nimoy, Star Trek 2009.
Yeah, a lot of people consider that a cameo. I don't. It but straddles I know a lot of people do. The line. A lot of people
it
do.
Like I said, it straddles the line, so it's kind of cheating. I have other things that I can maybe substitute it with, but, it, you know, I thought it was just, it was a beautiful send off of the torch, and I think it reminded us of the Star Trek of old, certainly me sitting in the audience as someone who was a Star Trek fan, and I love the scenes between him and Pine. I love the scene at the end between him and Quinto. And I just, you know, when he's looking over the congregation at the end and he just has the thrusters on full line, I thought that was just the perfect ending to that film. And I loved his presence. He helped make that film for me.
Yeah, that was a great use of Leonard Nimoy. I think I loved that cameo. I loved that part. I thought it was well it had good intent and good execution. But I think his cameo, which was definitely a cameo in Star Trek Into Darkness, was completely unnecessary.
It wasn't necessary, but let's not get into that because I'll have to kill you.
I'm just saying that I felt like it kind of took away from Star Trek 09, which made me sad.
I wish he wasn't in it, and yet at the same time, it's like, now that he's dead, now that he just passed away, it's like, how do I wish he's not in something?
I get that.
You know.
All right, well, my number two, we're really breezing through these. My number two is, this is a moment that has, it's only a handful of lines, it's only like six lines, but I quote this more than most things, and that's Jack Black's cameo in Anchorman.
I forgot about this. I haven't seen Anchorman in years and years and years.
Anchorman is a great movie. Anchorman 2 is an abomination. But in this one, it is a solid performance from Jack Black, where Jack Black is being Jack Black, where he's a biker, and and Will Ferrell throws a burrito out of his window. It hits Jack Black. He crashes his bike, and he just gets up and he hits himself on the helmet. He's like, "What the hell, bro?" And it's from that moment on, it's just fantastic. And then, of course, we all know what it's going towards. And so that's when he asks him, he's like, "What do you love?" He's like, "Well, I love scotch and my buddy Baxter here." He's like, "Okay." He picks up Baxter, kicks him over the bridge, which is what is clearly a stuffed animal that just adds to the humor. And then once he looks at Will, he's just like, "That's how I roll," and then walks off and we never see him again.
I forgot about Genius. This. I'm going to have to rewatch Anchorman, and I'm going to make a mental note to watch Anchorman 2, because you saying it's an abomination probably means it's a good film.
No, what that means is that it's a piece of shit. I cannot tell you how it is a crime against humanity how horrible that movie is.
I can't wait to see it. Thanks for selling me on it.
It is atrocious. I know that you like crappy things, so maybe you will like it. Maybe you will like it.
Well, you dislike good things, so that's par for the course.
Yeah, keep telling yourself that. All right, so we're on to number one. What is your number one?
Number one is definitely a cheat because it's not doesn't come from a single film.
But do you have a list? Do you have one on this list that's not a cheat? You've prefaced each and every one of them like, "This is kind of a cheat."
This is the ultimate cheat. Like, the other ones were cheats in the sense that, like, they straddled before, and one was because it was from a previous show, so that wasn't necessarily a cheat. But this one definitely is a cheat because it doesn't come from a single film, but it's a person who turned a cameo into a fun art, I would almost say, in a complete game. And so my number one cameo is Alfred Hitchcock in all of his films. If you're a Hitchcock fan, which I know you aren't, but your more intelligent wife is, then...
I heard that.
You know that when you watch a Hitchcock film, if you're a fan, one of the best games that you can play is spot the Hitchcock cameo. And it comes in...
So is this all, like, you know, Stan Lee?
It's like Stan Lee, except I would say it's even more clever than Stan Lee, because there are certain films of Hitchcock where it's physically impossible for him to be there. Like, I'm thinking of, if you've ever seen or heard of the movie Lifeboat, it basically takes place with all these survivors on a lifeboat in the middle of the ocean. There's no way that Hitchcock can make a cameo, but he does in, like, a paper advertisement or something that happens to be with them. And so, you know, the man came up with the most clever ways to insert himself into the film. And like I said, audiences back then, audiences now, it's one of their favorite, you know, it's almost a parlor game when you watch a Hitchcock movie. So that makes my number one for being that damn clever. And I think he was the first director to do that. I don't remember other directors inserting themselves into all their films before him. Maybe I'm wrong.
I'd have to look it up because I can't remember. But speaking of Lifeboat, if you if you ever want to, if you're ever going to shoot a short film, this wasn't a short film, but like if you are ever shooting a film or a short film that takes place in one location and you want to find out how to shoot it so that it's not boring, watch Lifeboat.
Yeah, I mean, it's masterfully done. But, you know, I love Hitchcock. And I you know, if you're listening to this, Mrs. Riddell, and if you want to come on and do a Hitchcock retrospective with me, I'd be more than happy to, because I know you love him and I do too. And we'll make your husband watch him and suffer.
Like I've said before, I appreciate Hitchcock more than I like him. But okay, so this leads to my number one. This one, I say with no hyperbole, that this could be the greatest film cameo of all time. It's at the top of many lists online of the greatest cameo of all time, and I feel no shame in picking this as my top favorite.
I can't,
because
wait to
sometimes
the
internet gets it and sometimes the internet doesn't, and this is one of the times that the internet got it, and that is Bill Murray in Zombieland.
That's right. Yeah, that is a good one. I saw that on several lists as I was trying to come up with inspiration for this.
This was a solid, solid moment. It came out of nowhere, but they eased you into it. You know, like they had the BM on the doors, a huge mansion. Then all of a sudden you started seeing his picture, like on a painting and everything. You're like, wait, we're in Bill Murray's house. But then you start to see a figure rise out of bed. We're like, holy crap, are we going to see a zombie Bill Murray? And then right when you think that you do, it turns out that it is Bill Murray. So there's so many different layers and kind of eases you into it.
Yeah.
And it's just, and then out of just right when he's starting to hit some of his funniest jokes in the film, he gets shot in the chest with a shotgun by the lead character. And it's just one of the greatest Bill Murray lines of all time is where, you know, Abigail Breslin says, "Any regrets?" And he's like, Garfield 2, maybe. Genius.
And that was pretty so fun too, because that came at a time when he had kind of, for the most part, left a lot of his comedy routine behind. You know, he was starring in Wes Anderson films, and he was, you know, this was not too long after Lost in Translation. He was becoming more of a dramatic actor. So to see him embrace comedy, even if it was for a short period of time, was great fun.
Yeah, it was Bill Murray's career has been speckled with greatness in dramatic roles as well as comedic roles and in cameos. And I think we should also mention his cameo in Space Jam.
Yeah, that was interesting to say the least. but I do remember that. That's a fond part of childhood. Space Jam came out when I was like 9, so.
Yeah, I was young too, obviously, when it came out, but I always remember Bill Murray playing basketball, and it just makes me laugh.
Not very well.
So we should yeah, not very well. I mean, compared to some of the other tunes. Yes.
So you said you had a long honorable mentions list, Tristan. I'd be interested to see what you came up with.
Yes, I will try to go through these quickly. Right. I won't spend as much time on them as we have obviously before. But Jim Parsons in The Muppets,
yes,
is one of those. Yeah, it's one of those cameos that you don't expect, but then when you see it, you're like, that makes total sense, because in the movie, it's supposed to be, we see like a Muppet version of Jason Segel, and then we see a human version of the main Muppet. I can't remember his name.
Walter.
And Walter. Yes. Thank you. And the whole time, like, once Jim Parsons pops up and we don't hear his voice, he just mouths the words to the song. You start looking at the puppet, the Muppet, and you're just like, wow, that really does look like Jim Parsons.
Yes. It was the perfect human personification. You're right.
It really was. And then we have Danny Glover in Maverick, where I'm a big fan of this movie. I love this movie. It's Mel Gibson, James Garner, Jodie Foster. It's a great Western. It's a great comedy. It's a great action film. And Mel Gibson's in a bank, and Danny Glover and his gang raid the bank and rob the bank. But like, Danny Glover has a handkerchief over his mouth, and Mel Gibson looks at him and just stares at him for a long time, and then pulls down his handkerchief. And, you know, Danny Glover almost shoots him, and then they just kind of stare at each other for a long time.
Right.
And then they kind of look away and shake their heads, then stare at each other again and go, nah, nah, nah. And it was, it was breaking the fourth wall, but just barely. And I gotta give it props for that. Another one is Tim Robbins in War of the Worlds. Now, this one is not because I think it's a good role or even necessarily that great of a movie. It's because this is skirting the line of cameo and supporting role. But the reason why I remember it is because when I was in the movie theater and Tim Robbins shows his face, the way that they shot it and the way that he moves his head all kind of snake-like and weird and like the camera is clearly saying, hey, look, it's Tim Robbins. And the entire audience laughed when he came on the screen, but it was not a funny moment. And so that's why it's making the list. It's just because it's memorable to me, because they were not intending it to be funny, but it turned out to be. And the next one is Chuck Heston in Wayne's World 2. Do you know that one?
Yes, Charlton Heston. Yes.
Charlton Heston, like,
Really? This is the level of acting we can afford? Bring someone else in here. And then it's Charlton Heston.
And he just blows it out of the water. It just, like, he makes this simple monologue just so cool and epic and poignant in a Wayne's World movie.
And then, so, you know, great. And then Mike Myers doing his verklempt, thank you. And then he just...
It is so great.
I have one more,
and then I'll be done. It is this one should have made my list, but it didn't, because I think this is one of the greatest cameos of all time, but it's not necessarily one of my favorites. I think that's the distinction. And that's Alec Baldwin in Glengarry Glen Ross.
Yes.
And that's when he's yelling at these guys, trying to motivate them to sell real estate. And he says, it takes brass balls to sell real estate. And this guy, then, like, my favorite line, I'm going to have to bleep this, is like, one guy's like, what's your name? He's like, fuck you, that's my name.
Yes.
You know why, mister? Because you drove a Hyundai to get here tonight. I drove an $80,000 BMW. That's my name.
You know what? I think I want to say that's the first time that Alec Baldwin played the kind of role that he would be associated with in his later career. I'm thinking like 30 Rock. Obviously he can't cuss on 30 Rock, but it's right. That same kind of inflated ego, over the top personality. I think that's the first time he tried something like that. And that was way back in, like, wasn't that like 1990 ish?
It was a while ago. I cannot remember.
It's early. Exactly. It's early 90s at the
92. Latest. 92.
Yeah, there you go. So, that would have had to be the first time he would have tried something like that, because back then he was still the leading man sort of type. But yeah, that was hysterical.
Yeah, and he has one more line that I'll mention, and there's a reason why. He says, A, B, C, A always, B, B, C, closing, always be closing. There's a woman at my work who has a needle point of that on her wall.
Now, speaking of that, have you seen the, they showed this in a compilation, but he appeared, as he did many times, on Saturday Night Live, and he basically played his Glengarry Glen Ross role in Santa's Elf Workshop, and they gave him that piece of paper that said, always be closing on it, and he started laughing like he couldn't keep it together. I mean, he almost broke character, but he essentially is playing the same role that he plays in Glengarry Glen Ross.
I've never seen that. I can't believe I've never seen that.
If I find it, I'll send it to you. Please do. It's fantastic.
All right, what are your honorable mentions?
Speaking of Wayne's World, I couldn't remember if this was one or two, but Robert Patrick as the T-1000 in one of them comes up to Wayne and Garth with the picture of Edward Furlong and says, have you seen this boy?
Have you seen this boy? That's so great. I forgot about that.
The one that has two on here, because I thought she was great in both of them. I don't know if you've seen the Blues Brothers movie originally, but Carrie Fisher has that role where she plays John Belushi's jilted fiance, and she comes in with the rocket launcher and the shotgun and tries to blow him away. Like, do you remember that part?
Yes, I do. Yes.
And then
Carrie Fisher has a lot of great cameos.
She does. And actually, the other one that I have on here is actually before she did Star Wars. She was in a movie called Shampoo with Warren Beatty. And I don't know if you've seen that one, but if you want to see a 16-year-old Carrie Fisher saying some pretty racy things to a much older than her Warren Beatty, watch her cameo in Shampoo.
Yeah, that was awkward.
It was funny, though. It was awkward in a funny way, but, you know, if we're bleeping half of this show, you know, just they have this conversation in the kitchen, and, you know, she's kind of arguing with him, and Warren Beatty says, well, look, I just want to be friends, and she's like, all right. Then there's this pause, and she looks up, and she goes, want to f***? And then there's just this pause, and I'm like, wow, 16-year-old Carrie Fisher.
Loved so it. Weird. So awkward. Yeah, she had, what movie was it? I can't remember where, it's, like, she plays a receptionist or something like that.
Scream and somebody 3.
Comes up. Was that Scream 3?
Yeah. Okay. It's when Parker Posey and Courtney Cox come up and said, you know, I was trying out for the part of Princess Leia, and who gets it? The woman who sleeps with George Lucas.
So great.
And she's great with cameos, as of now I'm thinking about it, because she also plays that, you know, group-led therapist in the first Austin Powers movie with Seth Green and Mike Myers, and yeah, she's fantastic with these cameos. Another one I have on here real quick is, I don't know if you've ever seen that, it's not a great movie by any means, but Loaded Weapon 1, the spoof of the Lethal Weapon movies. There's a brief cameo by James Doohan playing Scotty, quote-unquote, as in the police station, where the stereotypical black police chief is yelling at Sam Jackson and talking about different things. And he's like, Scotty, what happened to this scrap tuning machine? Can you fix it? And then James Doohan pops up and she's like, I'm doing it all. She's God Captain. If I push it any harder, she'll blow or something like that. And I just thought that was fantastic. I don't know if you remember this or not, but you should seek it out on YouTube. It's on there.
Yeah. I don't remember that. Yeah.
And then, spoiler alert, I'll just go ahead and amend my honorable mentions and stick in
I don't know. I haven't seen this. I haven't seen Big Short. I don't want it ruined.
Are you sure?
Yeah, I'm 100% sure. I don't want it ruined.
Okay, there's a really great one that involves, I'll say there's a really I'm not going to say who it is. There's a really great one that involves someone who's going to be part of a big movie later this summer. That's all I'll say.
Okay. All right. Well, that's our show, folks. Thank you so much for tuning in and listening and downloading and subscribing. Please, 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 please. If you would, go to iTunes, find the Nerd Party, rate us, review us. It means a lot to us. We have a lot of great listeners out there. And so please take 5 seconds of your time and give us a rating, give us a review. We want to give a shout out to John Mills. He just gave us our most recent 5-star review. It was very nice of him to do it. And we thank you very much for all the things that you said. And as always, you can find me at The Insane Robin on Twitter.
And you can find me at mhanson0207. Thank you so much for joining us on this special cameo movie edition of The Nerd Party. And that's a wrap.
Coming up next week.
Can you move at all?
No. You're alive. If you want, I can fly.
I told you I would always come for you. Why didn't you wait for me?
Well, you were dead.
Death cannot stop true love. All it can do is delay it for a while.
I will never doubt again.
There will never be a need.
Join the revolution. Join the Nerd Party.
Welcome to Nerd Party.